This is the Joy of Gaming. Welcome to the Joy of Gaming podcast. My name is Rich Lepore, and I'm here with
Jordan Alseca
and Tim McNeil.
And much like DC Comics did back in September, we are rebooting the podcast. And to get you acquainted with the way we do things here at the Joy of Gaming, we've decided to do a recap of the 2011 and talk about the games that really stood out to us over the past 12 months. So we're going to start off with portable games, and then we're going to move into downloadable content or downloadable games on Xbox Live, and then finally finish up with console titles that really stood out to each of us. But as previous listeners to the podcast know, we always start off with the games we've been playing recently, and Jordan, I'm going to let you take it away. What have you been playing, man?
Well, the biggest thing I've been playing for the past week or so is Halo CE Anniversary. I've played a lot of things, but that's the one that's taken up a lot of my time just because it's the one Halo campaign I never finished.
My favorite of all the Halo campaigns, by the way.
Yeah. Well, when I first got an Xbox, Halo 2 was already out, and that was kind of the go-to one to play with friends, especially with Live. Not that I had Live, but the multiplayer was much better. So I never really went back to Halo 1. But now I'm really enjoying the campaign. It's probably my third favorite behind ODST and Halo 2.
Jordan has this, just a little side note about Jordan. He has this way of picking favorites of everything. Like, he has a favorite everything, man. We were talking before, he has a favorite video game composer. If you talk about a TV show, it might be his fourth favorite. That just a little taste of Jordan there. So,
So
he's got his list of favorite Halo games all ready to go, man.
Well, Anniversary's just been a lot of fun.
It's number three favorite
in terms of the campaign. But
right.
Understood. The most interesting thing about it really is seeing what it looked like 10 years ago and remembering that it was graphically impressive then, probably, but now it because you can switch between the classic view and the updated graphics.
I've actually heard that that's like kind of like half the fun.
It can be
toggling that. Isn't it like the back button or something?
It's the back button on the Xbox controller, which the biggest reason is Halo at the time, because of all the different environments on the Halo ring, you know, showed off a lot of things. And so seeing the way it was then and how they do it now, it's not as visually impressive, and the HD graphics aren't really not even as good as last year's Reach. But for an update, it's really good and looks amazing.
Really? So, okay. So how do you feel about how 343 did with it?
I think they did really well. They added...
What are the new additions for people that don't know? And I'm one of them. Like, there's like these terminals, you said, or something. I didn't really understand that.
Yeah, there are terminals that further expand on the history of what the Halo ring world is. And it follows the character 343 Guilty Spark, the person who, the little robot that runs the installment.
Is that why 343 Studios called 343 Studios?
I would imagine, if only because they've spent most of their...
My mind is blown.
Yeah. They've spent most of their career making a lot of map packs, to my knowledge.
Speaking of that, have you ever seen, like, on this is like a new internet meme, like you just reminded me of, Tim, mind equals blown. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that before.
I've seen that a lot.
New.
For me, it's new. I don't really, you know, for somebody like I spend a lot of time like doing work stuff involving Facebook. I never go on there in my free time. I just like I'm not interested in Facebook personally. Yeah. I don't know. You guys do Facebook?
Some, though I don't really play many games on there.
Oh, games on Facebook? Forget it, dude.
I usually not only use Facebook if I'm trying to procrastinate on something.
Yeah. And
anyway, back to Halo.
So Halo's been a lot of fun, and the other big addition is they added skulls, which were in all the other campaigns where you could modify it. There's not a lot that they added, but it's still a very solid game, and if you remember that one, I would say playing it is worth doing again.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Like, for me, I went back right around Halo 3. I played Halo 3's campaign. I really enjoyed it. And then I went back and played 2, like, again, because I'd never finished it. And then I was like, I want to play 1 now, because I think I played part of 1. Then I went through and played the whole first game campaign, and that's when I decided, stacked up back-to-back, that was my favorite. And then ODST came out, which I know is your favorite of the campaigns. And for me, that one, I just didn't really like that one. It's like, first of all, it's got the only Nathan Fillion performance I don't like. And I've actually heard other people, I'm not the only one, who say that that's like a weak performance of his.
Have you ever seen White Noise 2? Because that is a Nathan Fillion movie that is
terrible. That's not particularly great. Not that the first one was the best. Isn't that
Michael Keaton?
Yeah.
Oh, well, he's so bad. You know what? But isn't it like, isn't the climax of that movie like he ends up in like some house that's making noises at him and shit?
They're ridiculously stupid.
Yeah.
Just in general. Just imagine something stupid and it's what happens.
It's so bad, dude. I remember that. White Noise 1 is really bad. There's a White Noise 2 with Nathan Fillion. Really?
Yeah, Nathan Fillion is
he the star? Oh, dude. Yes. I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it.
I saw it on Netflix and it was as bad as I thought it would be.
I'm seeing it, dude.
And the only
Is it on Netflix now?
I don't know.
Maybe.
Oh, dude.
And the only other thing I've been playing really is something that I know Tim's been playing, so I'm going to go ahead and pass it off to him.
So I've been playing recently, I'm on Assassin's Creed kick. I never actually played 2 or Brotherhood or Revelations, but
did you play
1
all the way through?
I did not play 1 either.
Okay. But let's just get it right. If we're going to talk about what you haven't
played. So I went through recently and I beat Assassin's Creed 2,
which
and now I'm about halfway
through
Brotherhood.
Right?
Yeah. I was really happy with
you're
the
halfway
game.
Through the Brotherhood campaign now?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. That's what I need to be doing. All right.
So I've been going through those, but I've been playing a lot of the multiplayer in Revelations because if you listen to us previously, you know that I was a big fan of the Brotherhood multiplayer. And the Revelations multiplayer is so polished compared to the other one where it's like, the other one was good, this is so much better. And I am just
In what ways?
Well, it feels a lot more stealthy this time.
Yeah.
Such as one of the biggest problems in the old Brotherhood is that there was an ability everyone had called stun, but it was worthless to do. And it was supposed to be something that if someone's trying to kill you, you can stun them and, you know, it'll not do it for you. But stun always went slower than kills, and so if anyone was trying to kill you, stunning was worthless because you'd just, you know, get hit. But now they have a thing called contested kills that makes it so, you know, if you're trying to stun someone, they'll kill you, but you'll still get points and they'll get less points. So it still becomes useful. And it's more fast in general.
So
you can play a more defensive player. But because you can play more defensively, now you actually have to be stealthy as opposed to just running around all the time.
Yeah. And having played a lot of Revelations and Brotherhood's multiplayer both, I think one of the big things about it is it was a very solid foundation, and they've made the little tweaks to particularly the scoring and how you get points and kills and all that, so that it feels more balanced and you have a better shot than you might have if someone was just running around killing everyone.
Well, let me say this. The one thing that I always thought was really cool about Assassin's Creed multiplayer is, you know, it took a mechanical problem with video games, and that is the fact that, like, every doctor, like, in Assassin's Creed looks like the same doctor. You know what I mean? And, like the NPCs, like, look alike. Like, every courtesan, they may have slight differences in color and palette and stuff, but every courtesan looks the same. You know, every jester looks the same. You know what I'm talking about? In games, NPCs look alike. Like, if you look in the background of games, like sports games back in the day, it would be like you look in the crowd and it's like it's the same 8 people, like, you know, like patterned over and over and over again. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So it takes that fact, that shortcoming of video games, because you can't have an infinite number of characters drawn, you know what I mean, or 3D models made, I guess, nowadays. But it takes that shortcoming, and it plays on it.
Yeah.
So you don't know which doctor is the one that's coming after you. You don't know which, you know what I mean? Like, I love that.
Yeah.
Like, that's so cool. And I'm wondering, you know, how is that still the case, and how does it factor in, and have they evolved it?
Well, it depends on which mode you're playing there, because what was most common in Brotherhood was the mode called Wanted, which was specifically just what you said. But they have a new mode called Assassination, to where there's still all the NPCs walking around who look like some of the character sprites, but for each individual player, there's only one copy of that person. So if you're playing the jester, you're the only jester on the board.
Well, no, you go. They're still playing on that idea, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're just doing it in reverse. It's literally almost like a mirror mode. It's like in this one mode, you as a player can try to blend in with other players that look like you, right?
Which
as a strategy.
And it can make for some of the more frustrating moments. You'll think you're on the person,
right,
and you kill the
wrong
thing.
That's not the frustrating. I mean, that's the point, though.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Is trying to figure out your prey by behavior, not visualization, correct?
Yeah.
Well, but the situation before as well is within the Wanted mode that was in Brotherhood, you had this compass that would put you in the direction of your target. So I always found myself following the compass more than I was looking at the screen, because then I'd be able to find out who it is.
I see.
With the assassination mode, there is no compass.
See, that's a problem in a lot of games where it's like you have to look at the map so much that you're not even seeing the graphics. Like, there are certain games when, like, you know, in order to have in like in a Batman game. Like a lot of people said about the original. I mean, Batman, the first Batman's brilliant. I mean, Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
Brilliant game. But one small criticism people had is you can't see the beautiful environments because you always have to be in detective mode.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And I had the same complaint against Metal Gear Solid 4.
Right, where they take gorgeous graphics and then they make you tint them for, you know, for tactical reasons.
Yeah.
So it's tinted this, like, off color. So you're saying that in previous Brotherhood, you multiplayer, you found yourself, you know, looking at the freaking compass. I mean, you might as well be playing a compass minigame.
Well, I mean, well, that was the way to find the located people. But since there's not the compass in itself, you actually are looking at the people since there's the only one copy. So now it's like,
yeah,
when I see that jester, I know that's another player. And I don't know if he's out to kill me or not, but I now need to avoid him.
Oh,
but
so
I need
to be stealthy
at the same time.
Oh, so what you're saying is that in assassinate mode, there are only one of each thing, but that one thing may not be after you.
Right, it may not be after you, but you don't know that. But then there also, since there's no compass, before, you know, you could hide in bushes and stuff like that, but it wasn't really that useful because you know,
people would be like,
the compass is right there, and they were like, well, it's pointing to this bush, he's obviously there. But now with that being gone, you can hide in a bush and sit there and just wait 10 minutes and wait for your target to come by, jump out and just stab him in the back of the head.
Yeah.
And it just feels like, oh man, I was preparing for this so long, that was such a satisfying kill.
Right.
And it's just did it switch it up just a little bit and it made it so much better. And another new mode that I really love is called Corruption, where it's kind of like hide and seek.
Okay.
To where, you know, there's one person who's looking for everybody, and when they find him, they switch sides and sort of join your side. And then then the two people will be after all the six, and then once the next one's found, and it's all sort of focused. And the longer you survive, the more points you get.
That's kind of that's a playoff of those modes they have in games. Like, I think, what's that game?
Infection?
Infection.
Yeah.
And with zombies and stuff.
Yeah.
And then Kane and Lynch did it, too. I remember Kane and Lynch, I think, too, had this mode where it was like you were on a team of these guys and like I think, oh, cops and robbers, I think, or whatever. And if the cop catches you, then you become a cop or like an undercover cop or something.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, Kane and Lynch, too, like, I give that game no credit. I think nobody else does. But on that, like, that one thing, it was good at. There's another one that has like one. There's another game like that I always think of that has like one claim to fame. You know how Gears of War like did the cover and stop and pop?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a game that inspired that people always talk about. Do you remember what that's called? Oh, I can't think of it right now.
I cannot think what
you're talking about. There was this old school game. I'm gonna look it up at some point. But anyway, go ahead.
So my big problem with the changes that they've done is if you're in a mode like an assassination, if you pick some unit that sticks out, obviously like the Jester or the Doctor, which are some of my favorites,
right?
They're now very easy to spot. Because if you're in like one of the female units or something like that, they look very similar. And so it's hard to tell, you know, is that one of them or one of the others. But the Jester obviously sticks out. And if he's the only one on the screen, you know that's another player instantly. And so it's one of those things to where before the graphical changes made no difference in the game, but now it actually has a strategic advantage or disadvantage with it. And so I find myself not picking them because they stick out.
I see. By the way, I took a second to look up that game, and it's Killswitch. I think the tagline here says, take cover, take aim, take over.
Yeah, which I'd never heard of.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. Cliff Bleszinski says like that's where he got the idea for stop and pop, cover-based gameplay or whatever. So, anyway, I thought that was pretty cool. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about that you've been playing, Tim?
I've also been playing the Shadow of the Colossus and Ico remastering collection.
Now, had you originally played those games?
Yes. Shadow of the Colossus is one of my favorite games ever.
Okay.
And so I loved it with the updated graphics. I mean, for me, it wasn't so much as, you know, the upgraded graphics changed the game that much, as much it was I would pay again to play this game just because I loved it so much. And to know that I'm giving money to people to make another game like that, I feel fine giving them for it.
Weren't you saying something along those same lines, Jordan? Were we in the car? Was that you and me, Tim?
I think it was you and me earlier. Yeah. It's just like, yeah, I don't mind.
We were driving by GameStop.
Yeah. I don't mind paying them again for it because it's such a good game.
And you want to support that developer so they can freaking ever bring out The Last Guardian, right?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Like, TGS just came and went. You know what I mean? La-di-da. Fucking Last Guardian.
I'm just going to love it when that cat thing in The Last Guardian doesn't die because everyone's like, oh, you know it's going to die. And it's like, yeah, they'll trick
I you. Think, like, they probably, once they heard, like, that outcry, I bet you they were like, no, definitely not going to die now.
Or they'll do, a real good fake or something like that where he's dead for, like, half the game and then he comes back and you're like, oh, my God, I'm so happy. Yeah.
And they'll just, like, just to be, like, badasses, they'll, like, you know, throw the mechanic out for half the game just to spite people, just to be Team Eco, man.
That would be awesome.
I think it's enough to just not freaking announce a freaking screenshot, man. I know there's a screenshot. I'm exaggerating.
Anyway, Rich, what you been playing?
All right. So I've been playing a couple things. The thing I've been playing the most is Skyward Sword. because that's the kind of game, like, it's like World of Warcraft, where you really can't play a little of it. You know what I mean? It's one of those games. Like, if you're going to play Zelda, you're going to freaking play Zelda. All right. And it takes a long time.
Well, here's the big question, and all the critics have had their opinion. How does it stack up to other entries in the series for you? Because it's been getting praised as best Zelda ever.
Well, that's interesting. I guess I'll take an opportunity to talk about it now. And that is, you know, I think it's a really good game. Best Zelda ever. You know what I'm really partial to? Strangely, Link's Awakening on Game Boy. I don't think I ever had more fun than playing that one.
I kind of agree with that too. That one I remember having so much fun when I was a kid just playing Link's Awakening. Yeah,
on a Game Boy with a freaking pea green screen.
I just
played
it on the 3DS with the virtual console download. And, you know, I agree. My favorite, and this might have to do with the fact that the first one I ever finished was the Minish Cap on Game Boy Advance. And that's probably my favorite one just because I have such an affinity to it being, and I love the items in that. So I think it has to do with your personal experience.
It does have to do with personal experience, but also it should be remarked upon that that is one of the few that was not made by Nintendo, the Minish Cap.
Yeah.
It was made by, like, Capcom, I think, interestingly.
I also like the other two they did, Ages and Seasons.
Right,
so.
Right. So, I mean, there you go. There's definitely a thread there in what you like. I mean, it may be that the interesting outside-of-the-box thinking in that game, like the shrinking down mechanic, and not to mention the fact that the items are different, that you're just saying, like, probably have, you know, weirder things. And that is the thing about this game that's interesting that you bring up. Because, you know, they do so many things in this game to try to differentiate it from the other Zeldas. You know what I mean? Like, giving you some different items. And then there's the Wii Motion Plus stuff. But then beyond all of those, like, surfacey things, there's the way that the game progresses. And it progresses in a way where their big, you know, call to arms was, we want the dungeons not to just be the focal point anymore. We want the parts leading up to the dungeons, the town parts, all to be just as good as the dungeons, just as compelling gameplay. Mm-hmm. And I'd say that they accomplished that. The whole game, there's all kinds of different types of gameplay. There's all kinds of different, you know, before every dungeon, there's like three different, like, mini dungeon kind of parts. So it's like, if you go to Elden Volcano, you go to the volcano, and then you'll have to, like, find some, you know, you go there and you explore to find out what the objective is going to be. That's the first part of your, like, this dungeon quest, I guess you would call it. Then you meet some character, and then this character sends you on, like, a fetch quest, but it's like a fun one where you have to discover stuff. Then once you discover that, then you can use that to maybe bring open the dungeon door, then do the dungeon. Then you need a clue as to where the next dungeon is going to be, so you got to go to this place called the Isle of Songs, and you play your instrument, and then that tells you where to go another place. Then you go to this place called the Silent Realm, which is like going around collecting tears with the Guardians, much like the DS games, like Spirit Tracks and Phantom Hourglass and stuff had, mm-hmm. which is a thing you go back to like three or four times. And then there's basically, what I'm trying to say is there's a lot of different types of gameplay, and they like keep alternating between these three or four types, and there's side quests
right.
that are more compelling. So, I mean, the long and the short of it is they went through all of this trouble to try to make the game play differently than other Zeldas. And unfortunately, it's just like every other Zelda. You know what I mean? Like, the way you use the items. Because, you know, it's just, the whole game is so indicative of Nintendo's thinking. You know, like, the way Nintendo designs a game, you play this game and you just think, it's just Nintendo all over the place. Like, every item and every character, I've seen every character before. They have the same personality every time I've seen them before. The characters look drawn the same way I've always seen them drawn. I mean, it's just, there's something about that game. It's so Zelda, you know? And I guess that's good. The game needs to have an identity. And if it weren't like that, there'd be a freaking public outcry. There'd be, you know, massacres in the streets. I mean, I get that.
What I always thought was good about Zelda games wasn't that they switched up the formula so much, is that you felt there's an entirely new world to do the same sort of thing.
Okay.
And so it's like, I always thought that was kind of a strength of it. It's just like, you know, I know how to do these things, but, you know, I need to think of them in an entirely different way to get through this.
You know what? And you'd love this game.
And that's what I always thought was the strength of Zelda, because, you know, it's like everyone's like, oh, you're going to get the hookshot, you're going to get the boomerang. It's like, I know I'm going to get the hookshot, I know I'm going to get the boomerang, and it's going to be enjoyable every single time because I'm going to be thinking of it a way I didn't think of it before in a new area I've never been to before.
Huh.
I always thought the strength was in, like, the level design and the ability to craft an entire world more than it was necessarily on gaming innovation.
Which is, I agree. I think I didn't play Link's Awakening until this year, and it's one of the oldest ones, but it's still fun. It's still its own adventure. It still does its own thing with the different elements, and that's why each game holds up.
And
so
that is really cool. And I definitely see your point. Judging by those guidelines, this game is a 10. I mean, you know, by that guidelines, it does do just that. Gives you a new way to experience the same kind of gameplay. But that's the thing that sort of bothers me a little bit. I just got the bow, and it's like, okay, I got the bow, and what am I going to do with the bow? I'm going to shoot these little eyeballs, and when you shoot the eyeball, the door opens. I mean, you know what I'm saying? and it's just like, I've done that about 360,000 times in my life. And that's really fun. I mean, and look, I'm about to talk about how much I love this game and where I think it belongs, you know, as far as, you know, games of the year or not. But at the same time, it's very Zelda. And another thing that really bothers me about it, too, is this game is very long. I mean, it's like a 50-hour experience, straight up, if you want to be a completionist like I am. And while I'm playing it, for 5 hours at a stretch, I'll be listening. You know, there's things that repeat over and over again. Like, you have to switch between day and night when you're in the town. And to do that, you have to watch Zelda lay down his shield and sword, get in the bed, and then it goes da-na-na-na-na. And then, like, he's asleep, and then it becomes nighttime. And then if you want to do it again, you got to go back to the morning. He's got to put down his sword and shield again in another lengthy cutscene. And then you go da-na-na-na-na-na, and then it's morning, you know? And it's just... I've seen that freaking little cutscene. It may only be 15 seconds, but man, I've seen that 15 seconds, you know, 1,500 times. And it's like that with everything. When you go to different areas, I got another example. When you're about to do a mini game, like Rickety Coaster is this one mini game where you're on like a roller coaster and you have to lean with the track or you'll fall off. It's really cool. But if you want to play let's say you fail, you fall off the edge and you have to start over. You got to go back up to the Goron and talk to him again and go through a whole menu to play again. There's no retry. And that's the kind of thing with Nintendo games. They refuse to do that. These trappings of modernity, they just refuse to do them.
I mean,
you know?
That kind of goes with the Zelda series. I was going to say, you know, that reminded me, my favorite 3D Zelda is Majora's Mask, but playing the same songs every time, you got to sit through those little 10-second animations, and that's just, you know, that goes with the territory
of
Zelda.
It definitely does. I'm trying to think... So, but anyway, the long and the short of it is, and I'm not quite done the game yet. I'm on the fifth dungeon out of seven. But I love the diversity of gameplay. I love the items. I love the motion plus. It's not as revolutionary as they may tout it to be. Excuse me, but it's still awesome. I love all that. What I think I like the best is the story, and it hasn't reached its culmination yet. But I actually give a shit this time, more so than I have in a lot of Zeldas. Like this one, like, you know, Zelda goes off and you're chasing after her pretty much the whole game. I actually want to find her this time. I actually care and I actually feel for him. And you know, he's a voiceless character, Link, you know, but you actually feel his emotions in this game. And I know it's crazy to say that, but you actually feel what he's feeling. You know, I know they say they keep him voiceless so he can be, you know, your avatar and it's basically you in the world. But I actually see Link in this game. And he's an individual character with individual feelings about Zelda, about this world. So, anyway, I think it's a fantastic game. I think that it deserves a lot of the praise it's getting. Do I think it's the best Zelda ever? I mean, I think Twilight Princess was a great game too. I mean, I think Wind Waker was a freaking great game too. I mean, these are great games. I probably like this one the best of those, though. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, well, I guess that's a good segue point for us to get into our Game of the Year discussion. And we are going to start, I guess, with our favorite mobile games, and then we'll move on. Not mobile. Well, I mean portable.
Portable.
Yeah.
Same sort of thing.
Yeah, you may think that, but mobile, no.
Given the way the market's going.
I know.
But anyway.
Next thing you know, you'll be reading GamePro, and it'll be like platform iOS. You know,
well, I would say
Game Informer.
Yeah, for the purposes of our portable, we're probably talking mostly PSP, 3DS, DS.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to let you lead off, Jordan. Go ahead with your favorite portable game of 2011.
Well, I was an early adopter for the 3DS, so I've played a good number of those games. There haven't been many that were that impressive.
In fact, there've been one or two.
Yeah, Ocarina of Time 3D was great.
Although, do you really want to play that again? Did you?
I'd never played it before on N64. Okay. But my number one handheld game for this year was early on. It was a DS game, and that's Radiant Historia.
Which I really wanted to play, man.
Yeah,
I really
wanted. I didn't get around to it. I haven't gotten around to
it. It's phenomenal. I would say it's... You've seen the time travel mechanic in RPGs before with Chrono Trigger, you know, one of the most famous ones. But Radiant Historia does it in a really interesting way, where instead of there being a single timeline where you go back and forth in that, there are two. There's a split timeline that happens early on, depending on whether the main character decides to stay in the army or go and be a spec ops agent. And from that, different things happen in each timeline where he has to jump back and forth between these two periods and try to figure things out where certain characters don't die or where certain incidents transpire differently.
So you mean like these two possible outcomes for his life, you switch between?
Yeah, because he has this thing called the White Chronicle, which allows him to control time and switch back and forth between them.
Now, is that something you could fail? Like if you had to go back and you're like, oh, I need to find a way to save this person, and you could fail to do it so that person would still be dead for the rest of the game? Or would it be like a story element you have to go through to go back and save them?
It's a story element that you have to go back through and save them. So at first it feels a little more linear, but as you go on and as more of the timeline opens up, there's a total of, I believe, there's over 200 different time points in the game that you can go and visit. And as it gets more developed and as you've seen more of the story, you have to go further back and you have to figure out where you're supposed to go, as opposed to be just, you know, obviously you have to go right to the next period that's kind of parallel to you. You have to go back and you have to consider different things. And there are moments where you can completely miss something by not fully exploring a dungeon and then have to go back and do it again later because you didn't know anything about this character being there. You didn't know you would have to save them to make the timeline come out right. And so eventually, as the story reveals more, you know, it becomes more intertwined and these timelines are clearly coming towards a single head through this main character, Stock.
Oh, that's so... What's his name?
Stock.
Oh, dude, I gotta play it.
Yeah,
it sounds freaking amazing.
I've been really backlogged on games, and so I wanted to go through the ones I'd beaten before, or I haven't beaten yet that I owned before I picked it up. That's one of them. Yeah. It's like, I need to get that.
It also helps that it has one of the just most simply fun battle systems in a JRPG.
Is it really that great? The battle system's really
fun. It's got the standard kind of turn-based that you would see in, say, Final Fantasy X, where they're at the top, there's different cards, and whoever's up in the lineup attacks next.
Right.
But the way the enemies are set up are on a 3x3 grid, and they take up different amounts of size. And there's a combo system at work. So if you have three or four characters that can attack at once, or if they have three of their cards in a row, you can attack with the first person and knock an enemy back into another enemy, and then the next person will attack both of them. Or if they knock
that's
that,
so cool.
Those two can get knocked into more. And you can eventually cluster all the enemies into a single spot, and then beat on them all at once with certain special moves.
That is really cool. So it becomes a matter of, you know, pushing your enemy into a corner and then nailing them.
Yeah, and the enemies can place different squares on their side of the field have different effects. So there might be a boost attack square that they'll try to move to, and so you want to grapple them away from it and smash them together. And it becomes very tactical, and it brings something to the battle.
But a simplicity of tactical, right?
Yeah,
it's not too hard to figure out. I don't like the sky like you guys do.
Yeah, it has some of that flavor through the grid and the way you manipulate it, but you don't have to think too hard about it. You can see a way to do it really easily. And so in terms of battle systems, it was just fantastic. And so both of those elements, the story and the gameplay, came together great. It had a fantastic soundtrack and really great pixel graphics.
Here's one thing I really love about an RPG. I love meeting a cast of characters and adventuring with them and getting to know them. Is that part of this game?
That is part of this game. The one problem with that is the way the leveling up works is that you're constantly leveling up, and whoever is in your party levels up.
Oh, so you have to switch them.
There's some non-party member experience, but it's not as big as if they were in the battle. And so you see certain characters more often in the storyline. Like the first two people he meets if he joins the special operations unit, he gets two team members who join him, and they stay more frequently than a party member you meet halfway through the game. And so you'll see them more. And so when I went to do the final boss, they're the two I took because they were the furthest along.
Yeah.
And they were the ones I was most familiar with. That said, story
wise. Oh, you mean you run into them in the story more often, so they're more leveled up, no matter how you decide to play.
Unless you spend more time in certain areas to level up for a fight or whatever.
Oh, unless you grind.
Yeah. Okay. But story-wise, I cared about all the individual characters. They might not have always been in my party, but you might have a party of five. You can only have three people in battle, and you have to use the main
character. I don't mean, in all these games, like Final Fantasy, with the newest Final Fantasy 13, You know, you have a cast of seven characters. They split up sometimes. They get together sometimes. You still have this cast of, like, seven characters.
Yeah.
And only three can fight, but you still are traveling with seven characters.
Yeah. And so you see them in different situations. You not only get to know these characters, but sometimes when you switch to the timeline, they don't know you. So you're seeing them from a different perspective where they're more antagonistic.
Right.
You're getting different shades of these characters through that time travel mechanic, and it adds a lot more depth to them.
You know, that reminds me, I think, something that people might be interested in knowing if they didn't know already. And this was some of the best news ever. We got, like, last week or the week before. Jordan actually texted me with this. I'll preface this by saying about 2 months ago or 3 months ago, I called Jordan up and I was like, dude, you're not going to believe what Wii game I just ordered and is freaking awesome and is sitting in my house right now. And he, of course, would never guess. And it was Xenoblade Chronicles.
Go right? Operation Rainfall.
Yeah.
Operation Rainfall, exactly. So I ordered it on eBay. I spent $72 on the freaking thing. And I thought $20 premium, okay, it's worth it. I got it in my house. And then I tried to look everywhere for a UK Wii. $50 I'd spend, maybe. You know what I mean? A Euro Wii. Can't find one anywhere. Amazon won't ship it here. Can't find one. Nobody's selling a freaking NTSC Wii, you know, or PAL or whatever it's called. So I haven't been able to play it. So I got this freaking $80 paperweight in my house. Looks really cool. Makes me feel really cool importing games and shit. But, you know, anyway, so Jordan texts me.
That, yeah, it's the Nintendo has announced it for a North American release.
April something.
Yeah, April.
I can't believe how happy and overjoyed I am to be able to play this game. The best RPG, Famitsu says on Wii, right?
Yeah. It's been getting a lot of praise. I've already got money on it at GameStop because it's a GameStop exclusive. GameStop and
Nintendo. Oh, it's
going to
be amazing. I got to do that. Huh. I got to do that.
Yeah.
I got to put money on it. I mean, I am so excited about that game. I can't even, there's no words.
It's a game I don't have a Wii, but it's a one that I really am missing because I'm a huge Xenogears and Xenosaga fan.
Well, why don't you should get a Wii. You can get a Wii used for $50.
Thinking of picking one up sometime.
To play that game, you have to.
I was
that
considering
and
it.
Zelda and Mario and all the great shit.
And the next Operation Rainfall is gearing up for its European release.
The Last Story? Oh, yeah. You mean that isn't out in Europe yet?
Not yet. It's coming out.
Oh, so we may
soon.
Get that too.
That's the next leg of the operation. And I've been a supporter of Operation
Wait,
Rainfall.
Are you saying Operation Rainfall is the reason we're getting it?
Pretty much.
Yeah, they've been.
Operation Rainfall got a list of, like, you know, 50,000 signatures of people who were like, we will pre-order this game if you release it.
They've done a ridiculous
and
amount
just,
of campaign.
That sort of
stuff
was just
I
like,
didn't
okay.
realize that they actually made this happen.
Yeah,
Nintendo's so stubborn.
They coordinated and got the pre-order up to the top of Amazon.
Yeah, most internet stuff is really unorganized, but Operation Rainfall, it's like, wow, these guys got their shit
they
together.
They kick ass. That makes me so happy. The power of what people can do, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which, and it's...
Because I was so pissed. When I saw that, I was just like, what the F? What the fuck is going on when everybody wants the game, there's no freaking RPGs, Nintendo's talking about trying to court back the hardcore gamer, and we're not getting a game that's already been
localized.
Right.
But it's good to see at least one, because there are others I've followed on Facebook, like 100,000 Strong to bring back Mega Man Legends 3, Galbadian Liberation Front for Valkyria Chronicles 3. But they're not as organized.
Oh, we're not getting that?
No, we're not getting it. Makes me pissed. I love that series.
Yeah. But
I cannot believe we're not getting it.
It is good to see Xenoblade come through because I love RPGs. Radiant Historia, going back to that, was probably the best one I played all year. So
okay.
I was glad to be able to talk about that.
Awesome. Tim, what is your handheld game of the year?
My handheld game of the year was probably Tactics Ogre for the PSP.
all right.
Which, big
surprise. Two tactical RPGs or tactical-ish RPGs. All right.
Well, Tactics Ogre sort of started the entire tactics genre in a lot of ways. I guess you could say Shining Force for us, but... You know, Tactics Ogre sort of made the Final Fantasy Tactics formula, and Final Fantasy Tactics sort of perfected it. So this is a remake of an older game, but it was one of my favorite games of all time, just like in the older one. So when I heard there was going to be a remake, I was super excited about it. And it was just as good as I remember the game originally being.
If not better?
Some ways.
Okay.
I think the game used to be incredibly difficult because if a character died, they were just dead until you got a revive spell halfway through the game. And even then, you know, you only got one of them. And if the person who had it died, there was no bringing them back. And so that just made the game incredibly difficult. And now it's really, really easy. And so I kind of miss it on that way because I feel it's just, you know, a cinch and I don't really have to use much tactics before I actually had to think them out. But the game was really ahead of its time when it first came out because it was one of the first games that allowed you to have really big, strict, you know, branching storylines. And I mentioned it before, like at the end of the first chapter, spoilers for a 20-year-old game. But there's a choice basically where you have to kill this town or you have to choose not to do it because basically your kingdom is faking killing the town to blame it on the enemy to incite everybody to war. Because basically, if they don't incite them to war, they're going to lose the war.
Here I am shaking my head over here as if this was like a true story or something.
But yeah, but that's the choice like, you have to make inside it, the situation is you're like, do you kill the people so that, you know, you'll have a chance in the war, or do you not kill them and lose the war?
Well, yeah, it's the idea of the many versus the few, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the idea. And so, like, you can see both sides of it, and, you know, but that choice you make, the kingdom either turns against you or you become the kingdom's champion and stuff like that. And so there's just really different storyline branches throughout the entire thing. And it's got a good cast of characters.
Does it have that RPG thing that I'm talking about where you're traveling, like adventuring with a bunch of cool people?
Yeah, and you meet tons of people throughout of it as well. And it's just like, you know, it's just a fun game all around. It's got that old school charm still where it still feels fun, but then it's got a new polish with it and stuff like that. They made it, like I said, it used to be extremely difficult. Now it's not so much, but they added in lots of side quests that weren't there before. They added in even more huge dungeons, which was crazy because there was a 100-level dungeon beforehand, which if you're doing a tactics board, you know, it takes 20 minutes apiece.
Oh,
you got 30
God.
Hours just for that thing. Yeah. But it was just a great game when it originally came out, and it just made me love it all over again.
Yeah, it's a hard genre to master sometimes, if only because, you know, even the Disguise series, that's my favorite SRPG series, mm-hmm. but different installments, it's hard to necessarily get the text right or get the difficulty right. So, I get what you're coming from when you say it's easier.
My main beef with this Gaia is that I always enjoy the game more in the beginning than in the end because it becomes so does power leveling later on where it's,
yeah.
I have one guy who can kill everybody, but everyone else on my team is pathetic.
Well,
and
I
it's
mean,
just like, eh.
It has gotten better about that.
Yeah.
I would say by three, I don't exactly remember. I played that a few years ago. Four definitely has gotten it to be a lot more well-balanced. There are still moments where you kind of have to grind, but it has gotten better about it.
I just remember last time I played, it was like, wow, my main guy is level 1500. My next guy is level 200.
So that game has like, everything is cranked to 11, right?
Yeah.
That's why you say, your levels are, you're level to 1,500. I mean,
yeah,
that's
well, the maximum of. Level in this guy is 9,999.
I mean, that's unheard of. I mean, do you level by ones or what?
Yeah, you level by ones.
But
Rich
it's bad power levels, yeah.
I am
The experience levels are a little crazy to where later on,
system
you know, you'll
of
kill
a
one enemy
style.
In game six levels.
Yeah, it gets...
Stuff like that.
How many do you gain?
You'll gain like six levels killing one enemy or something like that later on. So it doesn't take too long, but
yeah,
like
it gets to a point. There's sort of like a point where
And there's also
the floodgates open and you start fucking leveling.
There's also a reincarnation what happens, which brings your character down back to level one, but keeps some of the strength of what they have and changes their stat growth and stuff like
that. It makes them grow a lot faster.
Yeah, which I'm not too big into power leveling, so I did some of the side quests, which you know, level 1500 is actually not being that deep.
Yeah.
All right, enough of this guy. I'm gonna go.
Yeah, what's your favorite portable, Rich?
Thank you, man. I'm gonna bring it real simple here, and I'm gonna say, Super Mario 3D Land is definitely there. And I know Jordan, you love this game too.
Yeah, it was best on 3DS.
There's no question. I mean, the best three games on 3DS are the only three that are really worth playing. Have been Star Fox, the one you mentioned, Ocarina. Although I don't want to play that game again. Especially on a tiny screen, and this game. And
well, I'd give a shout out to Mario Kart 7 that's out now, though neither.
Well, we don't know.
We
haven't played it. Yeah. It came out last weekend, and I haven't seen the reviews. How are they?
Some are good. There's a few.
They're lackluster.
No. Most of them are good. Some are complaining about the series not being evolved enough. Again, going back to that standard.
What
Nintendo
about the fact
problem?
That like you like fly and drive in the same level?
Well, just there's some people have complained about a slowness. I believe it's either. I get these two mixed up. It's either Destructoid or Giant Bomb gave them a 5 out of 10.
Wow. It can't be Giant Bomb because they're out of 4 or 5.
All right. So it must have been Destructoid. But, I mean, I get where they're coming from. My favorite kart racer is Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing. It's faster. I like the controls better.
God. Another little tidbit about Jordan. His very favorite game of all time is Sonic the Hedgehog. And if you think that does not influence what his favorite kart racer is.
If I could go on, my favorite kart racer on Game Boy Advance was Konami Crazy Kart Racer.
All right, a little more credibility.
There's a lot of good
a
kart
little
racer.
More credibility.
I think that obviously, is less credibility.
They started the genre, but there have been others who've done it, and I think if you're going to do a clone of Mario Kart and do it better, I think that you can.
How was Sonic Riders, bro?
That was not good.
Really?
No.
How was Sonic the Hedgehog self-titled? 360.
There are bad Sonic games. Okay. I'm not going to defend
the good Sonic. Does the blue hedgehog named Sonic hook up with a lifelike princess in that game.
They're not all perfect.
She's a human princess, and she and Sonic hook up.
The last two games were amazing. I will.
It's Japan. You act like this is weird.
Yeah,
it is kind of weird, dude. Because he's not even anthropomorphic. I mean, he's somewhat anthropomorphic. Whatever.
But going back, look, I agree with you that Super Mario 3D Land was amazing. It was a great platformer. It was better than New Super Mario Brothers by far.
Although
to
I
me.
Liked that game. Although
I thought it was
game.
Too easy. I thought it was. It went fast.
Yeah, it does go really fast. I mean, I've had to play through it like 18 times to get my value out of it. But the thing is, it was really fun to replay. And that's another thing about this game. Although I'm finally starting to wane on me. But to try to get 5 stars on your profile, you got to play every level again as Luigi. And this final playthrough, like I've played every level 3 or 4 times already to get all my stars. You have to go through certain levels to get like power ups that you need for other levels. You know what I mean? You got to go through the whole level to get a Tanuki suit.
I did get all 5 profile stars on it, and I saw the final level. I wouldn't say it's worth it.
Yeah, I'm not there yet, but I'm close.
But it's a lot of fun. The whole game I thought was a great package. Luigi, still my favorite character to play as because he's harder.
He is harder. That's weird because I think that, see, now the way that, for people that don't know, one thing that's really cool about this game or divisive, a lot of people don't think so, is the fact that you play the whole game through. There's 8 worlds, about 5 levels per world, and then the last world has like 7 levels. And then the whole game is over, credits roll, and then you unlock Special World, and basically you play through all 8 worlds again with all brand new levels, 5 per world, but they're remixes of like the previous levels you played.
There are some original.
But there's some that are completely original. So basically, though, it's like 2 full games. Although either of them on their own would be too short, it's still 2 really long, like pretty long.
And the special levels are much more enjoyable than the original.
People say that. I mean, I when I was first playing through the original levels, they didn't feel too simple to me. But now when I go back, it's like, oh my God, this is a freaking joke. It's like, you know, but so the special levels are a lot harder. And as when you get to the end and they see, I don't know if everybody remembers playing Mario Galaxy, the things that they do. This isn't my favorite way of upping the difficulty. I'd rather you do it through level design. However, you know, they had the comets, or what were they called? The crazy comets, or what were those?
Crazy comets, I believe.
So, that kind of thing. Or the rebel stars or something like that. But it would be like there'd be like an evil Mario chasing you around. And not Wario, but evil Mario. He's like this little like guy or something. And he chases you around. But he's your mirror image. So like everything you do, he does next. So if you run one direction, you can't run backwards because you'll run into him and you'll die. So you have to like go in circles so that he goes in a circle and you can go forward then, and that kind of thing. And that's a real pain in the ass. And then some levels near the end, you only get 30 seconds to clear the level, and then you can pick up like time extensions as you go. And sometimes you can get those time extensions by grabbing little clocks and sometimes by killing enemies. But then near the very end, they start combining the two. And at that point, you know, where you have Mario chasing you and you don't have enough time. And you got to collect clocks. And at that point, I was like, all right, this is a little excessive. But all told, I sit down with that game and do everything else in my life. You know, I'll listen to TV, will be on in the background. I can almost watch a show and play it. I can listen to, I'm listening through the Harry Potter book audiobooks right now. I can do that, you know, at the same time as I'm playing it. I can be in the car and play it. It's just so mindless fun. I mean, it's a brilliant game and it's really fun. And I could just sit there and just play it and be entertained. But it's also a really great thing to do if like you want to like listen to something like this podcast, for example. A great thing to do is pick up this game, play it, and listen to the podcast in the background. That's a big way that I consume a lot of, you know, audible media is by playing games like this. So anyway, that would be my favorite portable game of the year. Would it be your second favorite, Jordan?
Probably. I can't think of any other that I played this year that would. So probably that would be my second favorite.
I mean, it's great. And the whole perspective that they have, this whole, we don't really talk too much about it, but this whole like 2.5D, or actually it's 3D, but side-scrolling 3D, if that makes sense. So it's got like front-to-back depth. Is that the way to put it?
Yeah, it is 3D, but they keep it pretty. If you've played Super Mario Galaxy 2, it's like the first level of that, where you run pretty strictly side-scrolling, except you can go back and forth in the screen.
So,
and the 3D effect actually really plays into it.
Yeah, in that way, it's a lot like Paper Mario. I will say one thing, though. The 3D parts, is like some parts that are, the whole thing's 3D, but there's some parts that are blatantly 3D. Like people call it like Rube Goldberg levels, where it's like, you know, You look at it one direction, it looks one way, and you look at another direction, and the world's different, you know? And with Mario blocks, they can do that interesting things with that. But the there's only like 10 of those in the whole game, and there seems like they'd be so easy to make.
Yeah.
It just should have been more of that. So anyway, embarrassment of riches.
All right.
It's a really good game. So I think our choice for downloadable game, we were talking about this before, and I think we all agree.
Yeah, surprisingly.
Bastion is our choice for the downloadable game of the year.
And why did you choose it, Tim?
I just thought it was a really polished game in general. I love the voice in the background. I thought that was a great little touch for everything with it.
Yeah.
I love the soundtrack. I love the graphical style.
I love the weapons.
Yeah, it was just a very polished game all around.
Yeah, and I'll particularly agree. The soundtrack was awesome.
Yeah,
really awesome.
Some of the, particularly the vocal tracks with the one character Zia singing, just beautiful. And in hearing them, I'd sometimes just be paused and be able to listen to the music because it's really some great composition on that. And the weapons are great too. There's a lot of standard weapons that you would see, but then there are some that get their own weapon slot that you wouldn't expect, like thrown lances. And it's just a great selection of weapons, and there's so many. And it's easy to find a favorite and be able to really level it up and play great with it. So there's a lot of different play styles too, which I would say is another great thing about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an awesome game. I mean, a lot of people just think it's all about the voice that leads you around, but underneath that, there's a fantastic action RPG, and it has really good replayability. As you know, you played it through twice, right?
Yeah, because of the new game plus feature to see the other ending. And the story wasn't the most complex, but it was nice.
I wish it was better, to be honest.
It was poignant enough, and I did like the characters.
And it had like the tiniest twist, although you could see it coming from 3 miles away.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think in a game like there, though, there's a simplicity to it that I really liked and sort of the stuff with it. And I think sort of the storyline, even though it was kind of simple, I didn't find it detracted for it so much.
I know I've been giving sort of a running commentary for new listeners to try to introduce you to all of our different personalities here. And that's one thing about Tim that's interesting is he... as much as he likes games, you know, that are just fun games, and tell me if I'm not characterizing you correctly, Tim, but you also are big on innovation and indie games.
Yeah, that's pretty true.
And what's, you know, what's new and that can actually, you know, override, you know, sometimes, you know, I mean, that's mainly, in a lot of ways, innovation is more important to you than anything.
Yeah, I mean, I would often like a game more that tried something incredibly new that was mediocre than, you know, a really good game that's kind of polished.
Like, Braid is one of your favorite games of all time.
Yeah, I love Braid, one of my favorite games of all time. Limbo is really great. Actually really liked a strategy game that came out recently called Acron that got really kind of bad reviews, but I thought it was an amazing game.
It just didn't have good enough graphics. They didn't take the time.
And there's just stuff like that where it's just, you know, I like something that tries something bold that just hasn't been done before more than, you know, just another World War II shooter.
Yeah.
Right.
And I agree with that point. I like a lot of originality. A lot of my games that I thought were the best this year were original and had great original concepts.
Yeah. Well, on that note, why don't we move along and start talking about our favorite games of 2011 for consoles? And I think we'll start with you, Jordan. What was your number three?
Well, yeah, these are in order for me. I don't know about you
I don't
guys.
Know if they're going to be in order for me, but probably. But
for me, the most, probably the most fun original game I had in terms of just outright being a cool new thing was Catherine, which I loved.
Catherine. I played that through, too. Did you play that one, Tim?
I did not actually get a chance to. It's another game I've been meaning to pick up.
Oh, it's really a must play. It's a must freaking play.
I'll preface by saying
real quick. Did you guys know that game sold 500,000 copies? And it's an Atlus game imported from Japan, as weird as it looks, 500,000.
It's pretty good.
And that's a good...
And going.
Atlus is one of my favorite developers.
Well, they're finally getting props in
a
pop market.
They at least, I believe they develop... Yeah, they develop Radiant Historia. So,
did they?
Yeah. Oh,
I didn't know that. Man, I want to play that.
And the development team that did Catherine was the Persona team, which Persona 4 is my favorite RPG of all time. I love the Shin Megami Tensei series in general, and so seeing this... really unique game from them was cool. It brought a lot of their same concepts of bringing demonology into the real world through these really weird story where this guy, Vincent, he's in a committed relationship, but he suddenly finds himself cheating with a girl who has pretty much the exact same name as his girlfriend, except with a C instead of a K on Catherine. And he starts having nightmares where he has to climb these towers or else he will be killed in real life. And the gameplay in the nightmares where you're climbing these towers and you're pushing blocks around, it's very simple, but just that it's never been done in this way before, in this unique kind of creepy story with this love atmosphere in the background that really drives some of the truly disturbing imagery in his nightmares. It's creative. It's ingenious. I really cared about Vincent. And
totally.
The morality system was, it was again, kind of felt a little tacked
on. Yeah, it was a little like short of greatness, yeah. That part of it.
But
a lot of people
does,
say like the questions they ask you are pointless in the end.
Yeah, they're pretty vague. And sometimes, it was interesting sometimes seeing how the answers stacked up to what I thought being the switch, because sometimes I thought it was going to be the good answer as opposed to the bad answer, or at least that's the vague way of putting it.
And then sometimes it was like, cheating on your girlfriend is totally okay as long as you're not sure about your relationship, or stuff like that that's so obviously wrong, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But, anyway. And it all comes down to the reveal at the end of the game of what each meter is specifically, not just being a good guy and a bad guy.
Right, right. And that, but even that is not like that shocking.
Yeah. But it did have a plethora of endings, a lot of which are really fun, some of which are kind of boring and
some of them are
confusing.
Pretty cool.
Some of them are hysterical.
And when you
right
get the reveal on
the
who's who and who the characters really are, their real identities, that's very cool.
Yeah. And I liked the parts of the game where you're just sitting in the bar talking to his friends, talking to people, trying to help them with their problems, texting on his phone, playing the really weird Rapunzel game that is essentially, it's the same as the
main
really game.
Weird.
But it's sort of like a puzzle mode.
Yeah.
There's 128 levels of that. So there was a lot in this game, too, that I found to be fun to play.
Yeah, a lot of people said that, like, they loved the story and, like, the cutscenes, but they didn't really like the actual gameplay. I liked it.
I liked
the puzzle climbing.
I really liked everything about it because the Persona 4 team have a very unique style.
Mm-hmm.
They have a very unique art style, music direction.
And view of the world, too.
Yeah. And it came through, and so I'm a huge fan of that, and so that made Catherine a game I really enjoyed. I've only gotten the deluxe edition of a game two times, and Catherine is one of them, because I really wanted all the cool stuff that came with it, because I wanted to support that game, because Atlas is a developer I wholeheartedly support.
You and, in this case, 500,000 other people.
Yeah. So Catherine, far and away, if you haven't played it, is a great game.
All right, so going on to my third pick, I'm going to go with Mortal Kombat. And
whoa!
That may seem like a weird chick for some of them. I mean, Rich just pointed out that I like indie titles.
Closet call. Closet call.
I also grew up in Mortal Kombat, and, you know, I was a big fan of the series when I was younger, and it just went downhill, and this really reminded me of the glory days of Mortal Kombat and did
Boy,
such a good
did.
Job.
It really did go downhill.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, it was an awesome game. One. Yeah.
I haven't actually played this one, but I've heard it's great.
Yeah, and it's what I loved about it is, on the competitive fighting scene, it's not so respected so much. Some people really, really, really hate it. Some people like it. Some people say they change it too much balance-wise, which I can understand, but it still feels that you can play it competently online. But I loved the single-player mode of it, because it was really, really expansive. I mean, they had a 300-level tower to where you got 300 different little stages. They had the story mode. They had the normal arcade mode. So if you didn't want to play competitively, you could still have fun with the game.
Right.
And I think
which is a lot more that's more of a fighting game I might be into.
Yeah exactly. And so I felt it's more expanding the market than I think like Marvel vs. Capcom 3 or something like that.
Yeah, I was surprised in that by the story mode. Because I thought, oh, it's Mortal Kombat. It's going to be fighting. I have my fighting games that I play. But a friend gave it to me to try, and I was surprised that the story mode was as in-depth as it was for a fighting game. And I mean, that's the thing. BlazBlue has tried to do story too, but I mean, it was a fun enough story.
That's another weird thing about this crew. Jordan and Tim are like the biggest BlazBlue fans ever.
I like BlazBlue a lot. I thought the second one was not nearly as good as the first.
Yeah, I'll agree on that.
But they're both, to find two BlazBlue fans on one podcast, that's pretty freaking rare. Anyway, go ahead, guys. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the only thing I liked about BlazBlue 2 was the downloadable character Makoto was like one of the other characters I can play as.
What did you think of Makoto, Tim?
She's top tier. She's kind of really powerful.
Yeah.
I prefer some of the other characters. I like Falkenhayn a lot. Just
he's
because
good.
Werewolves are cool as hell that aren't, you know, guys without shirts who are in love.
That aren't.
but like cool badass werewolves are awesome, and he's a good werewolf.
A good werewolf. Isn't that funny?
Just coming back to Mortal Kombat, I liked that it had that sense of nostalgia, but that was polished, that just had been missing for so long. And, you know, if you had kept up with Mortal Kombat, there's little changes in the story that, you know, kept it a little bit fresh where you weren't sure exactly what they were going to do with it. And the fighting is surprisingly competent for a casual audience. Maybe people play competitively, say the game's a little broken, But if you are not hardcore into fighting games but want to play a fighting game with games with your friends, that's the game to get.
Yeah. The one caveat I would say for that I noticed in the story mode is I'm relatively competent at fighting games, but it can get really difficult when you'll be in a two-on-one fight in story mode, if only because the way they switch off and the way they pull off combos together can be a little frustrating.
Yeah.
Especially if you don't have another partner to try to switch off with.
Yeah, it can be a little difficult sometimes in the story mode, but I think overall it's got really competent single player.
Yeah.
And I like the graphical style a lot, and just, fatalities, they went back to being as brutal as ever, as opposed to being a little comedic.
I remember that year when they tried to it was the year with DC where they tried to make the game not M.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you thinking, dude?
That's like one of the worst fighting games ever made, too. And it's just like, I mean, it was fun, but the game was so broken. Like, on day one, they found like 50 infinite combos that weren't even hard to do. Like, one of them was both one of the characters. You just did the same move over and over again. And it's just like, how did playtesters not find this?
But Mortal Kombat
testers,
was,
what? You know?
Yeah, Mortal Kombat was great. I like the X-rays. I thought
they
were
the X-rays were a cool addition.
There's nothing else to look at. They had some really...
They're basically the super moves.
Yeah, it's where you'll attack a person and you'll see a close-up of their bones breaking or their
That's so cool. I love that shit.
Yeah, and like, you'll punch them in the stomach and then you'll see them like vomit all over the
ground. Oh, I love
like that
stuff.
It's right up there. It went back to that sense of brutality.
I love that, like crunching bones. I mean, especially so over the top. Like, you punch that guy there, his whole spleen isn't going to pop out of his mouth. But in Mortal Kombat, it might. That's awesome.
And then some of the fatalities are just like, oh my God, I can't believe how brutal it was. Like, in particular, I mean, I'm sure people have seen it.
I want to hear
Noob Sabat's got one fatality because he's got a shadow clone of himself. He's kind of like two people. And one person grabs one leg.
Is this Sagat, you said?
No, Noob Sabat.
Oh, right.
One person grabs one leg and one arm. One person grabs the other leg and the other arm. And they basically make the person into a wishbone. And then they rip them apart down through the middle.
All the
organs are falling out. And,
my God.
The head's dangling on one side as one person got a little bit more of one side or the other. And that's one of the fatalities. And it's just like, that's so over the top, but it's so
Mortal
Kombat.
That is
Mortal Kombat,
so
and
awesome. That is so, okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right, well, I'm going to go on with my number three pick. And this one is a love-hate relationship that I have with a game. And it's L.A. Noire. Now, I am, to tell you a little bit about myself, to be fair here now, I am really into detective stuff. I like Hercule Poirot and anything by Agatha Christie, any mystery with a twist. I watch Masterpiece Mystery, all the British mysteries, Inspector Morse, all that shit. Love it. I love it, and I love it, and Jordan will attest to this, and I think I've talked about it with you too, Tim. Like, anything with a twist, I just love. You know, anything that surprises me, that's the stuff I live for.
Yeah.
Especially
when I'm telling Rich about something, the first thing he tends to ask, is there a twist?
I know. I want to freaking be surprised. I want to be surprised because, I don't know, I feel like if I'm going to a movie and I'm not going to be surprised, it's like, why even go? I don't know. I kind of feel that way. But I'm getting over it a little bit. It's kind of like a neurosis of mine, but a fun one. Anyway, so... going into LA, another thing is I love noir. I love film noir, and I love, hard-boiled detectives, and Marlowe and Chandler and all that great stuff. So when LA Noir was announced, I was like, oh my God, this is my game. Like, this is the game that is going to, that I'm going to get 1,000 points in, and so that it can be on my 100% list, and so that I can just be, identified with freaking LA Noir, because I love the idea. I mean, the concept of a hard-boiled, cop story set in L.A. back in the day and with a noir tone, and you're solving mysteries. And, I mean, it's just like, to me, it's a dream come true. And I love the game. It was very fun. But it's love-hate for me because as great as it was, it could have been so much better.
Yeah, I'll entirely agree with that. If only I played it as well, and I played half of it. Yeah. And it got to a point where... the way the cases were structured, you were fully aware you weren't arresting the right person.
Right, yeah. Right. It was
four or five straight cases.
Right, on the murder desk, you're literally, and you're this awesome detective who's like all about doing the right thing. Like, that's your big motivation, and yet every one of these cases, you're going around and finding clues to convict a guy who didn't do it. In five cases out of five.
And they make it obvious here because they set up a serial killer.
Right, who's doing it and framing other people. But your guy's no idiot. He's no fool. And then there's me. It's almost like setting up Shakespearean dramatic irony so that the audience knows what's going on, and then frustrating the fuck out of them for five episodes where they have to do the wrong thing anyway.
Yeah.
And that's so fucking stupid. Now there, and really, it gets to a deeper core problem with the game. Sounds like I hate this game. I don't. But the deeper core problem with the game is that, like that, instead of focusing on individual cases and making each one awesome, compelling, have a twist, a whodunit, all that, they tried to make the whole game a bit one big story. Or at least each desk you go to, one big story. When I say desk, it's like series of cases under a certain theme. And so, like, the whole game is one long story from beginning to end with recurring characters and this whole, you know, plot about, you know, military heroin or opium or Percocet, I don't know, some shit. And so, like, it, you know, as a long form story, it's interesting, but the potential for me to have had, you know, 20 mini mysteries that were all like with interesting characters, you know, and the way they, you know, the cool thing is, you know, they hired, you know, real actors, and they did, you know, that facial recognition better than it's ever been done in a game before, to the point where you can see if someone's lying or not. But you know what? You really couldn't. You know what I mean? You'd look and you really couldn't tell.
What bothered me about those sort of things is there'd be a situation where you're like, okay, I think this person's lying. I think they're lying about one thing. And so you'd be like, press them because they're lying. And then he would just talk about something entirely that you didn't want him to talk about.
Right.
And that bothered me a lot. Where it's just like, oh, I thought she was lying about where she was, not that she didn't murder her husband.
Yeah. It's just like, no, there's a lot of frustration. There's a lot of frustration. But I think at the core, what's important to remember, you know, about this game is, you know, it tried something very new.
Yeah,
it did.
And it did it in an awesome freaking way. The setting is great. The environment's great. I like the fact that you drive around and that people actually, like, jump out of your way. I think they do. Do they in that one?
Probably.
I think they do, where you can't, like, actually run into people. They just, like, sort of jump out of the way.
I know they do in Driver. That game has the most athletic civilians ever.
Maybe I'm thinking about Driver. But anyway, I like the fact that, like, you're actually in a Grand Theft Auto game being a good guy. That's a nice change, because I've never been a good guy in, like, a Grand Theft Auto-esque game before. Who are you going to say?
I was going to say Bully.
You're not really a good guy. You're a bully. You're that dude. I mean,
you're not a bully, though. You're fighting against bully. He is a punk, but I'd say an anti-hero.
I'll give you anti-hero. I'll give you anti-hero. I mean, but Bully is very, very different, too. I mean, we can almost give that credit in a whole different conversation for what it did. But I just think that this game was... And second of all, you know that the development cycle of this game was very troubled at Team Bondi, to the point where that development studio has crumbled. Because of the unfair work practices and, you know, some people supposedly high ups who, you know, literally drove people, you know, whittled people down to the bone to get this game made and didn't pay them what they deserved. All that kind of, isn't that right?
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. But at the same time, I can't help but think that, like, they slave drove these people into making, like, this passion project. And the game almost bleeds with passion. I don't know. I love that game. And I will especially love it because there'll never be another one like it, I don't think. I almost think that process to make that game, like, is the only process that could have birthed that game, and that another game like that will never come. I don't think it sold as well as they expected. You know, I don't know. I think it's a very interesting call case, but, I mean, still to this day, the avatar items I'm wearing on my character are LA Noir shit.
I mean, I agree it was a very interesting game. I don't regret playing it, even if I didn't love it like you did. I thought it was okay. Mm-hmm. I thought it had a lot of problems.
It did.
But I would play another one if Rockstar were to take up the mantle, mm-hmm. But we'll see.
And get it right. Yeah. I'd like to play another one of those more than Max Payne 3, although I will play Max Payne 3. Anyway, so that's my love-hate pick number 3. And I think we're back to you, Jordan.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Number 2.
My number 2 game, which I was kind of surprised that I wasn't really surprised that I loved it, or that I was surprised that I put it this high on the list, because I didn't love it as much as the predecessor. And that's probably why it's number 2 and not number 1, was Saints Row the 3rd. I loved Saints Row 2. I bought Saints Row 2 on a whim and was blown away by how much I fell in love with that game and did not want to put it down, because it's by far my favorite sandbox title. I love it more than Grand Theft Auto, anything Rockstar's put out.
Which you also love.
Yeah. Because I don't want to say that. I don't want to belittle Rockstar. I love Bully, Grand Theft Auto, Red Dead Redemption.
Red Dead.
But Saints Row 2 was amazing, and so I came into Saints Row 3 excited, because they've made it clear that they want to take their series as far from the realism Grand Theft Auto is trying for. They want to make a crazy game, and Saints Row 2 was that. The storylines for the different gangs in that game were surprisingly compelling. I became emotionally invested, and the oh shit moments in that game really got me and made me just want to keep playing. Saints Row the 3rd jumped up the action, was a much better control, but the story fell kind of flat,
mm-hmm.
which was really the biggest problem against it, because Saints Row 2 had a surprisingly compelling narrative.
Which blows my mind, because that game is supposedly, you know, not as much as the third, but it was very much, you know, its claim to fame was over the top, going around, you know, pumping liquid shit out of a sewage truck.
Yeah.
And that kind of craziness. And to think that there's a great story hiding in there.
It's surprising within the madness. The thing about Saints Row 2 was you were taking down three individual gangs, which has kind of been the setup for all of them. There are three different gangs for the different parts of the city. The first one, they were more strictly realistic type of Latin Kings, Crips, Bloods type of gangs. Whereas in Saints Row 2, they went to samurai, tattooed brotherhood members, and Jamaican
dealers. Oh, that's awesome. Rastas, yeah.
Yeah. So it upped the craziness and really... It let the different gangs have their own personalities, and you got invested when they started messing with your territory. The cool thing about Saints Row 2 was each storyline, you worked with a different specific gang member of your team. So it was like having three storylines where you got to know these different characters.
That's so
and you got
cool.
to develop your relationship.
Was one of them Johnny Gat?
Yes. The problem with Saints Row the Third is that there aren't branching storylines where you play three different lines. Everything's in one storyline.
I see.
And the gangs kind of go to the wayside after the first act. You get through the first act, and then you kind of are fighting the gang, and then you're fighting this government initiative, and then zombies show up. And it's kind of a mixed pot. The story is still pretty good. I did get into it more. I still absolutely love the different gang members that were there from the last game, so that kind of carried over, just my affection for characters like Shaundi and Pierce. But the big problem was just I didn't feel that compelled about the new characters. What I did love about Saints Row the Third was simply that some of the missions were outstanding in their craziness, in their over-the-top fun manner. The first big mission of the game is a bank robbery where you don't just rob the bank. You go in and you hook planes to the bank vault and try to ride it out of the city.
Yeah. Or I saw a mission where you were falling through the sky in a tank.
Yeah.
Shooting things.
You shoot at other tanks as you fall through the sky.
So it's like a convoy plane that was carrying tanks, like exploded. So all the tanks start falling. And then the tanks are fighting each other in free fall.
Yeah. And then you have to jump out of the tank, and then you have to free dive down to another tank and then land in said tank so that you don't die.
Right. Oh, and then when the tank like lands with a thud after, you know, literally going down, you know, millions of miles it would have to be to fall that long. But after that, it hits with a thunk and you're just like pop your head out the top. Hey, yeah. What's up?
It's over the top. It's crazy. And
but that's the point.
That's the point of this of Saints Row. And the side activities are fun as ever. There's one where you escort a tiger around the town and try to keep it from getting too pissed off at you while PETA members... They're not PETA members,
oh,
but they're
cool.
Essentially PETA members.
You know what other one's really good, too, as much as it's a knockoff of a lot of other things, is the game show.
Oh, yeah, the Professor Ginky's super ethical reality climax, I believe.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of cool activities where you're just doing crazy stuff, and the story missions, when they go over the top... They go over the top, and they really deliver. I mean, there's a part in the game where you go into essentially a Tron-type matrix to fight one of the gang leaders.
Oh, dude, don't even tell me all this.
Yeah.
And then one of your friends is this pimp who talks in nothing but auto-tune, correct?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
So
the game... We gotta be going now.
The game just, yeah, it completely is revelous and does all this crazy stuff. It's just not as long or as storyline-driven as Saints Row 2.
See, I just picked up 2 on your recommendation. I can't wait to try it.
Yeah, so I think I still am excited for it. It's still the best open-world game I played all year, and I loved it. It's just I wish it had been a little stronger in the story department. It probably would have been my number one game of the year.
Cool. All right, Tim, number 2.
Number 2 for me is going to be Gears of War 3.
I was hoping somebody would pick that.
Yeah, it's kind of a hard choice for me, but... I like first-person shooters or third-person shooters in this instance.
Or third-person cover-based stop and pop.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it. I like them when there's a good co-op, and I think Gears of War has one of the best co-ops in a first-person shooter around.
Tim, have spent a good amount of time in Are You a Gamer playing co-op Horde.
Yeah.
And having a blast.
Let's play co-op Horde, play in Beast Mode, and it's just something that, you know, you get some friends together, and you can just play for hours and hours on end, and you don't even realize the time's been doing that, but you just had so much fun while it was going on.
Yeah, Gears 3 was in my top 5.
Yeah.
If only because what started off as a relatively just meathead shoot and kill things, I found surprisingly involving by the third installment with the characters really being characters I cared about. And
I don't care about the story in Gears 3. I think it's stupid.
It's all right. I'm in between you two on that one.
I really liked it. I mean, I get emotional at games, and I really did when... There's a certain point in the game at the end of the third act where a character dies, and I genuinely, I feel for the main character because he is a thick neck, But I felt like his character developed over the three games in a way that I actually cared about him. And I was surprised by that.
So don't tell me what happens.
Uh-huh. I was genuinely surprised by, actually. It's not like I went into the story thinking, oh, it's Gears 3. I can't wait for this emotional climax to the saga.
I hope there's another awesome story like Dom and his wife turning into a freaking whatever.
Yeah. But I was surprisingly drawn in, and that was my big shock about it. I thought it was still one of the best controlling and just polished games.
Well, yeah, what I have to say about it is that I think that if we all had to maybe sit down and agree on the best game of the year as far as having the most robust set of features, about being the most polished, about having an amazing campaign, about concluding a trilogy, which is not an easy thing to do, about being made right here in Raleigh, North Carolina, which is freaking awesome, and a bunch of other reasons why I think we'd probably all agree that technically, this is probably the game of the year.
I think I'd agree with that. What I love most about it is it's really accessible to a large group of people. Because like one of the things I like about first-person shooters, or I dislike about first-person shooters, is since they're so focused on competitive multiplayer, if you haven't been playing for a long time, it's really hard to get
Everybody's so good at Modern Warfare that you can't play it.
If you haven't been playing, you drop in, you're dead automatically, and it's just not fun.
Sniper shot in the neck, and that's it.
In Gears of War, you know,
pop, pop.
It doesn't feel that way because you're working together as a team, but you still feel you're contributing something to that. And so as you're building up, and then if stuff like you die, you know, you feel like someone comes, helps you out. So it feels like, you know, you're really doing it as a team. And I really like that about the game. And I love Beast Mode because I love modes where you get to play as like the enemies. I love the variety of the characters you can be. I love the mechanics with it. I wish, one of the things I really wish they would have done is had a Horde mode where somebody plays as the humans and somebody gets to play as the beasts.
Yeah, the only,
and that would be really cool.
The biggest thing I had with Beast Mode is that that they could probably patch really easy was that there were certain creatures that were pretty overpowered.
Yeah.
The Corpse was only a third tier character, but it was essentially immortal if you burrowed.
Yeah.
Oh, so, boohoo.
No, I liked it. I'm just saying it would make it hard to do a strict versus.
And that's probably why they don't have the versus mode, because it's really unbalanced, that sort of stuff, where it's just like, you know, what are you going to do against three berserkers?
The reason I say that, I don't mean to be rude. I just say that because I like overpowered characters. I like a game to make me feel freaking
badass.
Oh, no,
that's the only character I would play as once I unlocked it.
Oh, yeah?
But
you know what I mean? Right,
mode.
Of course.
I'd always go to...
You're talking, it's got balance issues. I got you.
I'd always go Wraith to Serapeede was usually what I do. Yeah. I prefer the melee classes for it. Go ahead.
And the other thing I really liked about it is I'm not generally one who plays multiplayer games online. And Gears 1 and 2 weren't exactly lauded for great online lobbies. 3 I actually got into for a while. I was playing it online with other people regularly because the maps were great. I thought it connected really well. I thought there was a balance to it that wasn't there before that made it a fun multiplayer game. And so that's another, you know, star for it.
And before we go on to this next game that Rich will be talking about, I think Gears of War is kind of like pizza, in that if you're with a group of people and you need food, you can always get pizza and no one's going to be upset.
Yeah.
That's with Gears of War. If you're with a group of people, you need a game to play, you play Gears.
Yeah.
No one's going to be like, nah, Gears sucks. And that's what I love about it.
And that's why it's number two.
And that's why it's good, yeah.
Okay. My number two, we already talked about, and I was actually about to say that, you know, I think it's important for us to mention that there are a lot of big games like Gears of War 3 that we didn't pick that are great games. And I think another one of those is Arkham City. Now, this is, you know, the new Batman. It's a great game, but it was so built up for me, and it just didn't live up. I know you agree with me on this, Jordan.
Yeah, I agree, if only because I got into it at first, and I liked the opening, and there was a lot of things I did like about it, but I felt that it wasn't as focused as Arkham Asylum.
And the interiors were so much of a letdown. Like, the exterior is great, big city, that's cool, but it didn't have interiors that were compelling.
Yeah, I think one of the things that made Arkham Asylum work so well was that they really nailed the feeling of Batman and how Batman acts, how he looks for stuff, how he would play. And I think they lost a little of that in City, if only because of the way he kind of grapples around the city like Spider-Man.
Yeah, he kind of grapples around the city too easily. Yeah. I hear what you're saying. He can, like, fly. I mean, he just, like, can get anywhere. He's so nimble. It's not quite him. I think you're right. I never thought of that.
There are a lot of things in the city, but there are still times when it feels dead because it's very drab. It's dark. It's meant to be. I mean, it's supposed to be a prison city, but it's not a vibrant place. And...
Yeah,
I didn't enjoy
being there that much. But
I agree that it's a fun game, and I wouldn't say it's a bad game by any stretch, but it just didn't do enough to excite me as a gamer.
Yeah, and I think I'm in the same category. And this was a year like that, I think, for me, where a lot of games that I was really looking forward to, Deus Ex is another one, I liked it. It was good, real good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it didn't blow me away, and I think next year is going to be the year for me with Mass Effect 3 and with BioShock Infinite, especially BioShock Infinite. Yeah. BioShock 1 is my favorite game of all time. No question. Number one. So BioShock Infinite for me is going to be, you know, literally bliss. I mean, literally heaven on earth for me. Playing that game is just like Ken Levine, like, please come over to my house and give me a tutorial and let me play like a demo build like right now. Anyway, like little teenage girls like Justin Bieber. I want Ken Levine, man. I want him to come over. Not like that. I want him to come over and give me a,
just like that.
Give me a demo. Fuck you. All right. Anyway, so all of that said, though, I think that for me, the games that I enjoyed the most are what I'm putting on my list. And so that said, and that more applies, I guess, to my number one when I talk about that in a minute. But my number two is Skyward Sword. And I think it's a really good game for all the reasons I talked about before. I'm not going to really go into it again, except to say that about just after the fourth dungeon, there's seven, which was not yesterday, but the day before, I got home from going out looking for Christmas tree. And I was like, I am dying to go home and play Zelda. And when I had that feeling, you know, that feeling,
yeah,
you know, when
yeah.
when there's a game you love that much, you know, and you're just like dying to go play it. It feels like home, grabbing the controller and playing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, really the joy of gaming. I mean, it's just that like, it's like a tingle you almost have. It sounds really weird, but you know what I mean? It's like, I just want to play this game. Like, it feels so good to play. And that is the way I started to feel now about Zelda. Now that I've really gotten deep into it and I've got the full circle of my weapons all established and, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of that point. So if for no other reason, 2 days ago, when that moment of Zen hit me, that's when I decided it was on my best of the year list. And I think it's time for your number one, man.
All right. Well, before I go into that, I'll kind of go off your thing where there are games I would have loved to talk about but didn't quite make the mark.
Okay.
For me, the two big ones that I kind of were grappling over were Sonic Generations.
Oh.
Which I absolutely loved.
That didn't even make your top three?
Wow. No, it made my top 10.
Oh my God.
The biggest reason was I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I thought it was fun. Aside from some of the issues with the boss fights, it just wasn't as good or as
loved it. I thought you
I did. It just wasn't as good or as deep as Sonic Colors to me. I know a lot of people praised Generations over Colors because it was easier to get into, but when I play a game like that where you want to speed through levels and try to I kind of want the time trial aspect to be there, where I want to go faster and I want to get the best possible score. And the problem with this is that I would play levels the first time and S rank it and get the best possible rank.
Yeah.
And I played through the entire game and got about more than half the levels the first time through. And it was so easy to S rank everything. As long as you don't die, you'd essentially get an S rank on a level. And the story was a letdown. It was a little... The final boss was awful. But as a recreation of all the games, these classic levels, I thought it was amazing. I thought it was a great game. It just wasn't as good as Sonic Colors as an overall product.
I still can't believe it's not even your top five. That blows my mind. What was number four?
Number four on my list would have been Gears.
Okay.
And the other game would have probably been number five was the party game You Don't Know Jack, which I've played a lot of this year
that's
with
something
Rich.
That's something we share in common. Neither of us have ever played it with anyone else. It's just like a thing. Me and Jordan and Jordan's girlfriend. And we've tried to bring other people in, and it, like, hasn't worked. So I think you need to get the right group of people together. It has to be the right mix.
Yeah, it's just a funny, irreverent, awesome little party game that it's not like a game like Scenic where you're getting random questions. Each episode is set up as an episode.
Yeah.
But it allows them to tell, surprisingly enough, there are little storylines throughout some of the parts of the game.
Like each question is, like, you know, number one, number two, number three, number four. There's 10 questions per round. And before each question, there's like this little like beginning, and it's always the same song for number one, always the same song for number two. But they change them up a little bit, like so. They'll be like, I don't know. Can you explain it?
Yeah, they're the number six has a robotic song, and so every once in a while, when number six comes up, the six will sprout a little robot face and start talking
and say, "I love you," but it won't do it 9 out of 10 times.
Yeah,
and then it'll do it. So every time it does it, you cheer. You know what I mean? Because like anything that's withheld, you want it more.
Plus, it's a pretty full game. There's 72 episodes before DLC, and they'll run about 10 minutes apiece. So you're looking at a lot of playtime.
I think it's more than 10 minutes apiece. Yeah. I think it's 15, 20 each.
Yeah, if you're being generous, probably.
And we take our time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a fun game, and
I'm really glad you picked that for number five. Anyway, but that, I digress.
Yeah,
we're going to your number one.
Yeah, but leading off, You Don't Know Jack, one of the most important things to me is enjoying the story. I'd say storyline more than gameplay a little is what I care about. And so when a game has both of those and really lays it on in terms of being the funniest game I played all year, no game other than Portal 2 was the best thing I played this year. I absolutely loved Portal 2. I loved Portal. I played that game. I bought Still Alive when it came out on Xbox Live Arcade, and I played that over and over leading up to Portal 2 because I was just chomping at the bit
for it. That's so crazy to me.
And in terms of games getting hype, Batman got hurt by the hype. Portal 2, I still absolutely loved that game.
I think Batman could have lived up. It just didn't.
Yeah. The story in Portal 2 was awesome. It was funny. It had a lot of hysterical moments. I laughed out loud genuinely in that game, which is something I don't do too often. I found the characters to be compelling, GLaDOS coming back and going through certain transitions that I won't give away in case you haven't experienced the story.
Oh, I haven't.
The character of Wheatley was great. The character of Cave Johnson, played by J.K. Simmons, was great.
I was going to say that guy from Juno.
Yeah.
the dad from Juno.
I just thought the story was fantastic, and more importantly, the gameplay was amazing. All of the new additions, the propulsion gel, the excursion funnels, all of the different things that worked together to make the game so compelling, and that every time you were getting to a new area, you were running into new stuff.
Dude, I have to play it. I've sort of like boycotted it, not because I wanted to be an ass and boycott it, but because I just like looked at it. I actually owned it at one point and traded it in, only because I just never found the time when I wanted to like sit down and play a game that didn't involve the usual ways of interacting with a game. And I know this is very counter, especially the way Tim thinks about games. But for me, there's a lot of things I like about familiarity in games. And I like original stuff like L.A. Noire. But even that, you know, it's still a traditional way of interacting with the game. With Portal, you know, like some games you have a sword. Sometimes you have a gun. Some games you go around, you know, talking to people and RPG battles. You know, I mean, a lot of but one style of game that I never really find comforting is the Portal style. Puzzle games. You know what I mean? A puzzle, and it's kind of hard to figure out, and it's just kind of like, oh, I got to, you know, bend my brain. And I like to think I'm an intellectual person, but at the same time, when I play video games, a lot of times I don't really want to. I don't like puzzle games that much, and I don't know.
Honestly, the truth of Portal 2 is that the single player isn't really that taxing. There are moments towards the end where it gets where the real difficulty is in co-op.
Which
is really the revelation of Portal 2 being one of the most fun co-op experiences I had all year. I played it with my girlfriend. We played through the whole co-op campaign. And then when the DLC came out, the peer review DLC, we played through that because the co-op puzzles in that game were devious. Especially in the DLC, it got to the point where I'd be in class and I'd start sketching levels to try and figure them out outside of the game.
That is such a testament to like loving a game.
The level design was just so clever, and it had these, once you realize the solution, you're like, of course.
Yeah. See, that's the best kind of puzzle.
I love aha moments.
That's the best. That's the best.
Yeah.
When a puzzle is difficult, but in that kind of simple way, where it's like when you figure it out, it's like, why didn't I think of that? As opposed to, oh my God. You know what I mean? Like certain puzzles, it's like, wow, no shit, I didn't figure that out. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's why, we mentioned earlier, that's why I love Braid. It's my favorite game of all, like, I won't say favorite game of all time, but definitely up there, where it's just like, all the puzzles, it's just like, oh my God, I finally got it. That makes so much. Why didn't I think of that?
And that's why I like Portal 2 so much. It had a lot of those moments. It made me care about the co-op robot characters because they were expressive and fun.
Which is a feat.
Yeah. It was just a great game that made use of every aspect and made for a truly enjoyable number one game of the year experience.
And now I would like to say we've given you the number one, Jordan's given you the number one game of the year award, Valve. Give me the next Half-Life. This is ridiculous. No, episode 3 didn't even come out, let alone Half-Life 3. I mean, you know what I mean? Like Half-Life episode 3 and then Half-Life 3. I want either one of them. How about an announcement? Are we ever going to get Half-Life? I don't think so.
Valve avoids threes. They don't really have many threes in their library of games.
Is there going to be another Half-Life?
Theoretically, I don't know.
I mean, all right. Anyway, what's your number one? One,
number one
Tim.
Game. Sort of a caveat to what people were doing earlier. I played a lot of older games this year that I had not had the time to play. And so a lot of the games that I played this year were not this year's games, and so they didn't qualify for this list. With that being said, the best game that I played this year that came out this year was Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3. Specifically because I love Marvel vs. Capcom 2, and so I loved Marvel vs. Capcom 3. It lived up to all the hype that I wanted of the game to be. And then Ultimate just added so many new things to it. I mean, I love the new characters with it. And even though it's still very unbalanced in a lot of aspects, I mean, Wesker's still way overpowered, and they buffed him for some reason.
Why?
I don't know. I really think Capcom sometimes just like, yeah, we want to make this person better than everyone else. Because like, even if you look at some of the stuff like the X-Factors, which is this ability that you can use like once per battle that'll give your guy a temporary speed and damage boost, you'd think they'd balance it a little bit by making the weaker characters get a better X-Factor and, you know, the stronger characters get a worse one. But that doesn't even happen, so it's just, I don't even know what they're thinking sometimes. But I digress. But I just love the variety of the characters. I love all the new ones. I love, you know, Phoenix Wright is in the game. And
that's
it feels
awesome.
Just as if you were fighting with Phoenix Wright, you know. He goes into turnabout mode after he does a successful objection.
That's awesome.
And he's just completely overpowered when he does that.
Earlier I heard you saying, people, this is so cool about this. Earlier I heard you talking to Jordan, you were saying, people are mixed on Phoenix Wright because he's like really not very good until he goes into his turnabout mode.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking, you know, you could apply that exact sentence to the Phoenix Wright game.
Well, it's even better. It's,
you know what I mean?
The way he gets to his turnabout mode is he has to find evidence, and he collects the right type of evidence.
See?
And once he gets the right piece of evidence, you know, that's when he can get the successful objection.
But even that sentence that you said there, you know, he's only good when he's in his turnabout mode. That's what's true of the video game.
Yeah, and it does such a good job
that's
of that.
It's so cool.
Just like, you know,
it's one-to-one comparison. It's brilliant.
It's like Hagar's in it. He's got a spinning lariat, but it does a little bit of damage to him, just like it did in Final Fight. And, you know, Arthur, he plays throwing multiple types of weapons, but he can't, you know, get hit and stuff like that. And all the characters,
That's brilliant.
They're just like the Capcom characters.
In pros and cons. That's brilliant.
But on the same aspect, you know, Arthur's got nothing against Wesker when, you know, Wesker teleports behind him and gets a 30-hit combo off.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's still just so much fun. I love the details that they put in individual characters, where it's just like, this character feels just like it did in the other game, but now he's in a fighting game. And they do it so well, and it's a great competitive fighting game as well. It's just like, the competitive fighting game community loves the game. It's the one they're probably their pick of the year. They, like I said earlier, they don't necessarily like Mortal Kombat, but they love Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3. And it's
just
such a
polished
game.
Hey, you win some, you lose some.
Yeah. And I enjoy fighting games in general, and I enjoyed both of them, but I like Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 more than I like Mortal Kombat. And it's just a fun game all around, even when I'm getting my ass kicked because it's so fast-picked, but it's
right.
Just fun.
All right. I think that's a good call. I don't play fighting games, but I think did you play Ultimate, or have you only played the other one?
I've only played the other one because I haven't. Just a lot came out November 15th.
Yeah.
I was playing new stuff that I, you know, hadn't played before in
Got
a
it.
Different mode.
Well, we're going to have to take your word for that one, Tim. I'd love to see that right. Turnabout mode. I love Phoenix Wright. Okay, my number one is a real closet call. Real freaking closet call. I can't believe I'm picking this as my number one. But if I look back on the game that I had the most fun playing this year, and, you know, the podcast is called The Joy of Gaming. That's what our real focus is. You know, our intention on this podcast is to talk about technical proficiency of a game is very important, and we'll always cover that. But what it really comes down to is, what are we enjoying playing? Like, you picked your number one based on that. So did Jordan. You know, that's what we pick our number ones based on. For me, that game was, oh my God, I just forgot
Rick
the name.
Rick Perry Redone.
Shadows of the Damned. Shadows of the Damned. I freaking love that game. It's the Suda 51 Resident Evil team mix mashup game. It's the first Suda 51 game. I mean, No More Heroes is pretty good gameplay. It's not great. It's the first really good playing one of the Suda 51 titles. Killer 7 was a freaking abomination of control. I mean, it's so freaking abominable.
Still, I gotta say, I was looking through games, you know, trying to pick my top 10 for the year and whittle them down. Shadows of the Damned, I just blew past. Because I had fun with it, but it surprises me that I agree.
I just loved it. I just loved it. You know what I loved about it? Going through that game and like World 1, 1, 1, 1, 2, 1, 3, and each one I never knew it was next. And you go into these different caverns. You know, you're in the underworld trying to save your girlfriend, who's been taken over by the Demon Lord. And you go, so basically you're going through the underworld. And it's basically like a Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas or it's like a Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. It's like a road trip through hell. And that is so freaking cool to me. You're going on this adventure, and your buddy is a former demon who's now turned into like a gun, and he's a little skull. And there's just so many little touches that make the game brilliant. Like, for example, I've never played a game where they acknowledge to you that your main character is an idiot. But in that game, that you get to these certain books, like where you read a story of a character that you're going to meet later, and your little, you know, skeleton guy who's your companion, he's really smart and intellectual and British sounding. So he'll read the book one time, and he'll read it, you know, once upon a time, there was this and this and this and blah, 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 blah. And he's like all like intellectual and smart. And then finally, like two books later, Garcia, your main character, Garcia, he's like this like sort of Mexican Spanish dude, like too cool for words, wears a leather coat, which sparkles in this really cool way. Let me just add that makes it just looks really cool. But he can't read. he stumbles over words. And G has to correct, and the little guy has to correct him. It's so awesome. I've never played a game that had the balls to say that your main character is an idiot. I mean, and just to have the wherewithal, to have the gumption. I don't know what the word is. Just to have the fucking balls to do that and not give a fuck what people. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, because so many people make their main character like it's their personification. Like, I think Cliff Bleszinski looks at Gears of War and he's like, I aspire to be Marcus. You know what I mean? And, you know, I think that's a lot of developers do that with their main characters. And this is not a guy anybody would aspire to be. He's kind of a buffoon. He's kind of like he's badass as far as he can kill a lot of things, but he's nobody's hero. You know what I mean? And he's just going in for this girl who's really, like, weird. He found her on a garbage heap. That's how I mean, everything about the game is ridiculous, including me picking it as my number one. But yet, I freaking loved it. And at the end of the day, I have to pick what I enjoyed the most. So my number one game of 2011 is Shadows of the Damned. I know.
That's everyone's shaking their head. It's a shock.
Jordan's shaking his head at me.
But, hey, if you had fun, that's all that matters.
You know? I kind of think it is. So I guess that's our list. Anybody have any closing comments?
I wanted to give some shout-outs to... I really love Child of Eden as well.
That was not
a game that I could put on the list, though, because it wasn't top three. But I loved the innovation that was in that game. And had I finished Revelations by this point, I'm pretty sure it would have been in my top list, Assassin's Creed Revelations. But had it not finished, it wasn't...
How are you liking that one compared to... you haven't played the single player of Revelations yet.
No, I haven't played the single player of Revelations yet. And so that's why I was not able to put so. But the multiplayer is freaking awesome.
Right. How about you, some shout-outs?
Shout-outs, I would say the other things that I would have loved to mention, Assassin's Creed Revelations, the multiplayer is fantastic, original, creative, and a step up from Brotherhood last year. And the single player's still, it's not the best single player, but it's fun. So it's a good all-around package, I'd say. And the other shout-out... Rayman Origins.
Oh, I forgot it. A lot of fun. It's so good.
In fact, if I were going to pick my platformer of the year, I'd say that would beat Super Mario 3D Land.
It's close. They're both fantastic. Because it's more original.
It does a lot of cool stuff. And
by the way,
and
they do this really cool thing where the art uses this Ubi art engine, which allows the artists like drawing that game to draw things and import it directly in to the game engine. So therefore, that's why it has that awesome hand-drawn look that's phenomenal. And yet they handle hitboxes properly in that, you know. And Tim talks a lot about hitboxes because he's in fighting game stuff. But you know, every platformer has them, every action game has them. You know, they're the thing around your character that defines when you've hit a spike and when you haven't. You know, and in that game, like they give you some leeway, and that's great. I mean, it's just a smart game. It's well designed. And it's fun. Every level is exciting. It's great.
Yeah.
Sorry, I stole your thunder. Go ahead.
That's all right. The only other thing I'd really shout out to is. Pokemon White version I played earlier this year. It is...
Racist. Why didn't you play Black? Why didn't you play Black?
It is technically the longest game I played this
year. Why didn't you play Pokemon Black? All right. I'm putting you on the spot here.
I just like that mascot more. He looked cooler. Mm-hmm. And he was a cooler dragon, white? I thought.
Because he was white?
He was an electric dragon as opposed to a fire dragon, which I thought
was
more original.
Got a problem with fire? You racist against fire?
But I thought it was the best Pokemon game since Silver. I thought it added new stuff. It put an emphasis on new Pokemon. It felt like a fresh adventure, which is something neither of the past two generations had. So I thought Pokemon White and conversely Black are just some of the best
Thanks, man.
Handheld Pokemon games.
So you give them a little nod at the end, huh? Yeah. And Black. Yeah.
Generally a huge Pokemon fan, but I have a problem with that because I play competitively online with like this simulator, and I can't compete anymore since White and Black came out. I used to be really, really like high quality, but I can't play anymore. I can't do the adjustments. The new stuff, I mean, it doesn't seem like it'd be that different, but it totally changes the game. Like, you know, when you've got Politoed being able to do Drizzle all the time, and you got Ninetales being able to get
So these online games added in all the new characters? Is that what happened?
Well, there's basically, it's called you can get it off of Smogon.com, but it's basically a Pokemon battle simulator where essentially you get to make your perfect team versus someone else's perfect team.
But when the new characters and the new games come out, they input the data about
it. Yeah, and the new characters, I just can't compete anymore. Right. So I'm a little spiteful against the game because of that. Because they used to be in, you know, a scale where 1,500 is what you start at, and, you know, really good was like 2,000. I was at like 1,850, so pretty high up there, and, you know, I'm down to like 1,500 again because of that game.
Well, my honorable mention is Rage. That game is a freaking phenomenal shooter. It shoots great. I don't know about everything else. You know what I mean? The way the environments are. There's a lot of repetition. Oh, and the buggies are great too. Like the dune racing or whatever. That's awesome too. The gameplay is great. It has it down. I mean, better than Doom too. Better than Quake. It feels great. You're running and gunning, and better than any game this year as far as shooting mechanics straight up.
Yeah.
So for that reason, I give it credit.
And I'll say one last thing, because I don't think anyone's mentioned it yet, and it is still a good game, even if it didn't make any of our list, was Elder Scrolls V.
Yeah.
Skyrim.
Oh yeah, great game. Not our favorite.
It was definitely an improvement over Oblivion. I did enjoy it. I just, at the end of the day, it didn't do enough original stuff that I wanted to, you know, get into it.
I'm just always amazed by the size of that game. My brother is a huge fan of Elder Scrolls in general, and he was telling me how he's 15 hours in, and then he looked at his map, and he hadn't even covered 10% of the map, and I'm just like, wow, that game is freaking
huge. Jordan stopped playing it, he was 35 hours in, and it was like freaking dropping a freaking bucket.
Yeah. And I only stopped because I lost my data.
Yeah, Jordan had this, like, data save thing where he was like, he had to retrieve his profile, and when he was selecting to delete the corrupted old profile, you tell it.
Yeah, I accidentally deleted all associated items, and even though I jumped up to turn off the system, I still lost most
Warning,
of my stuff.
Never do that. When it says delete profile or delete profile and items, don't do that. Don't delete profile and items ever. Because, I mean, if he hadn't run up and like literally pulled the plug out of the wall, we would lose our whole You Don't Know Jack save file.
Important part of it.
It's surprising.
And if you know us, that would be a big blow because we've been working hard at that game.
Yeah.
And the achievements, too.
Yeah.
So you're way ahead of me, but hey, I'll catch up. All right. Well, on that note, any other honorable mentions? I know you got one more, Tim. One more thing you've been playing this year.
Actually, that's it for right now. That's all I can think of. I mean, there may be one that comes to me later, but that's it.
Okay, well, I got a question. Last thing. What do we think of 2011 as a year in gaming? Because I didn't think it was that great.
Really?
I'm going to put that out there. I thought it was like, I liked the last couple years more.
I thought it was solid but lacked innovation.
I thought it was one of the more innovative years with really? Games like Portal 2, Saints Row the Third, Radiant Historia. Shoot, there was something there.
You're gonna tell me
list.
You're gonna tell me that the third is innovative.
Creative.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right.
Which
we'll
I
go
would
there.
Tie into innovation.
Me, this was a year of sequels.
It was a year of sequels. The best original game was Catherine to me, in terms of not being a sequel. Mm-hmm. But I thought that what we did get were a lot of really fun, solid titles. Where pretty much every game I there were no games I bought that I was pissed that I bought them. I always had at least some fun with every game I got. Mm. Which isn't something I can always
But see,
say.
That's the thing, though. I find it to be like a very average, very lackluster, very solid, but not amazing year. You know, some years it's like, oh my God, they say like, I think 97 was one of those years.
Yeah, something. 98 was
98,
I
mean.
Yeah.
Where they just talk about those years, and it's just like, you know, Final Fantasy this came out, and Metal Gear Solid came out, and all that, you know what I mean? These years that are like literally groundbreaking, and I definitely don't think that's something you can go back and say about 2011.
No. Yeah. But I'd say next year looks bright.
Oh, Bioshock, infinitely bright.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of lackluster on next year because, you know, there's Bioshock Infinite, which I'm looking forward to. I think Bioshock gets a little too much praise sometimes, but I'm still a fan of the series. But Bioshock Infinite looks great. But other than that,
I can't really think of them looking like. Oh, I got it. Diablo.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not into that.
Diablo is always a game that the idea of Diablo is better than the game of Diablo for me. So I'll play it for like 3 hours, and I'm like, wow, I'm not really having much fun.
I'll say this. My most anticipated, coming as kind of an oddball pick, but my most anticipated game next year isn't Bioshock Infinite.
I know what it is.
Yeah. It's the follow-up to 999.
Weird.
Which is my favorite DS game, hands down. Actually, it's probably my favorite handheld game.
It's really awesome. It's like an interactive novel, like the one that they ever freaking imported from Japan ever, and yeah, it's freaking awesome.
It's a great story, and I'm looking forward to the follow-up to that. So I'm excited for that to get localized sometime next fall, probably.
And actually, I just remembered another game I'm really looking forward to.
I knew there was... Okay.
Forward to next year. Phoenix Wright versus Professor Layton.
Is it really coming out next year?
Yes, that is next year, and that's a game that you got to be a specific type of geek to love.
We are all that geek, yes. In fact, as different as we may be. Well, on that note, it's been good talking with you guys. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
I'm really glad we're rebooting the franchise, so to speak. The joy of gaming is back in full effect, and... Wow, that was really lame, huh? Anyway, we will be back probably in January, and we're going to start up a whole new year with a whole lot of cool conversations about gaming and most importantly, what we love about games. So in the meantime, happy holidays, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Christmas, all of the above.
Yeah, have a good one.
Yeah.
And we'll talk to you soon.
See ya.
See ya.